Welcome to episode 41 of the Do Care podcast. On this podcast, we discuss topics related to queer, intersectional, eco-feminism, and artistry, or anything related to any of those individual adjectives. And I am one of your hosts, Georgie Corkery, pronouns she, they, and our other host, Mary McGee, pronouns also she, they, is not joining us today, but will be on in the future. The topic for today is the Southern Utah Climbing Alliance, which I'm excited about as somebody who's become a new climber in the past 2-3 years and gets the opportunity to explore the state in a different way as a climber, not just a hiker, and to talk about the Southern Utah Climbing Alliance with us is Misty Murphy. Hi, Misty.
Hi, Georgie. How are you?
Good. I'm excited to have you on. And Misty, would you share with us your pronouns?
Yes.
Great. Thank you so much. Before we jump in, I'll share with you something that I care about. And right now, climbing very much is one of those things. It's been great for me. It's a good outlet as a grad student. It's been exciting to get out doing something different. Misty, what is something that you care about?
Definitely care about my environment, climbing, keeping climbing open, having those open spaces that we can still go out and enjoy. You know, with the growth of Utah recently, it's become quite challenging. So a lot of focus has been on that recently in my life.
Yeah, that's the main reason why I wanted to have you come on. Before we deep dive into our topic, we're going to do our icebreakers. The first one is asking if you have interacted with any cats recently. And the reason, Misty, that we bring this up on the podcast is just because thinking about cute things floods us with serotonin. And so we wanted to dive into cats, and also because we're cat lovers on this podcast. Have you, Misty, interacted with any cats recently?
I have, actually. I have a cat.
Ooh, what's your cat's name?
Gigi. She's a black cat. We rescued her about 9 years ago. Mm. She was found behind a dumpster at 7-Eleven. So I interacted with her just about 5 minutes ago.
That's great. Very cute.
And I was actually showing Holmes the other day and saw a clipped-eared cat that was so friendly.
Oh,
I'm a cat lover.
That's great. Well, the cats that I've interacted with recently is one cat named Sushka, who I've brought up on the podcast before, who is human, is Misha. And that's it. I haven't been seeing many cats lately, which is sad for me. The next icebreaker is wildlife, talking about what wildlife we've seen. We like to bring this up because it highlights, you know, how we're connected to our environment. And whether we're in the city or going out backpacking or climbing, we see different wildlife. And that just reminds us, you know, what we're a part of. So, Misty, have you seen any wildlife recently?
Yes, I have. I live kind of out in the boondocks a little bit. Our property borders BLM land, so I have a lot of opportunities to see a lot of wildlife, which is really nice. Yesterday morning, I had a prairie falcon come really Ooh. Close to me, and I was just talking to it, having a little conversation. So... And I have a lot of bird feeders, so I have a lot of birds around. But yeah, that prairie falcon was pretty special because it was not afraid of me and was quite close to me for a while.
So. Yeah, wow. That's a fun sighting for sure. I should have a list of the birds I've been seeing recently. I'm a little bit of a birder. I hang out with birders a lot because I love how passionate they are, but I'm not a great birder myself. But I have seen a few herds of elk and deer out and about while hiking. And I saw 2 bald eagles, which was pretty nice for me, on one hike up Smithfield. Smithfield is up here in Logan.
Yes, I know where that's at.
It's a cool spot.
I pay attention to animals. I'm a hippy dippy when it comes to that kind of thing. I have these new cards. They're called medicine cards. And it's all about pulling a card with an animal. And it's all very positive. It's kind of like tarot, but it's all based on animals. And it's all very positive. It's kind of fun.
That sounds fun. I do like tarot because it's a way to check in with yourself. It's almost like a journal prompt, you know? And I really do like the idea of doing it with animals. For conscious content consumption, I am going to share a podcast, but Misty, do you have anything that you want to share first? Whether it's a book, a poem, a movie, or another podcast.
I just read a book that's amazing, and I have a hard time getting through an entire book.
Oh.
Attention span's not great. It's called Living Your Yoga. And even if you don't do yoga, It just has some really beautiful phrases in there, kind of implementing different things in your life that might be hard to on a daily basis in the world that we live in. Patience, for one of, you know, we stand in a grocery line and we get all impatient. And so that would be my high recommendation right now. It's an easy read and it's a beautiful book and it's one that you could read over and over again.
All right. Living Your Yoga, the first book in a while that Misty has read all the way through. Do you know who the author is?
Not off the top of my head.
Okay, that's all right. And I'll link it in the show notes. Well, my conscious content consumption is the podcast You're Wrong About. And I've mentioned it before on this podcast. You're Wrong About is an American history and pop culture podcast created by the journalist Michael Hobbs and writer Sarah Marshall. It is currently only hosted by Sarah Marshall. Michael Hobbs, I think, stopped around 2022, but they have a good repertoire when they're there together. And then when Sarah Marshall is doing it by herself, it's still excellent. Sarah Marshall is a journalist who is obsessed with the 90s and women of the 90s, while Michael Hobbs has more interest and focus on earlier history. And the format is that Sarah would either present to Michael, maybe about Princess Diana or Jessica Simpson, and Michael Hobbs is reacting in real time to what he's learning, or vice versa. Michael Hobbs would teach Sarah about something, maybe Anastasia or Marie Antoinette, while Sarah Marshall's learning in real time. And they're both incredibly sympathetic and understanding human beings. So as I listen to You're Wrong About, I feel like I'm becoming a better person and learning how media has covered these people incorrectly and unveils these myths that we know about these people and these people that have shaped history, and if not history, our own understanding of culture and maybe ourselves, depending on if we're 90s babies. It's a fun way to review elements of history that aren't necessarily important, but they do speak to what culture was at the time and what culture is now. Other episode topics that I haven't mentioned yet are the movie rating system, the Donner Party, how email took over the world, the chicks versus the Iraq War, Stonewall Uprising, Tanya Harding, Monica Lewinsky, Anita Hill, and Lesbian Seagulls, which is the reason why I brought up this podcast in the past, was to specifically talk about that Lesbian Seagulls episode. I think this is a great podcast. It is really funny and it's well done and it gives you some insight onto how our culture works. I highly recommend anybody go give at least one episode a listen if any of those topics sounded interesting.
That sounds awesome. Yeah, those all sound very interesting. I love podcasts too. So
yeah, I probably listen to podcasts a little bit too much. Speaking of Live Your Yoga, I should sit in silence a little bit more. Let's dive into Southern Utah Climbing Alliance. If you want to start, Misty, by just telling folks, what is the Southern Utah Climbing Alliance?
So it's been a little bit over a decade. We were approached by the BLM and they approached me and a few other people that were maybe well known around here for development, including my husband, Bill, and Todd Perkins, and basically said, hey, you got to get your, can I swear?
Yeah, you can say, you swear all you want.
Together, climbers, and because the mountain bikers had their association and there really wasn't anything here that was being actively trying to keep places open and working with local government's resources. So that combined with Arrow Canyon, which is actually in Nevada, but it's really close to us. So it's like 45-minute drive. Mm. It's having some serious access issues and they wanted to shut down all development. And at the time we were developing quite a bit down in there and it was a really fine line. That canyon was split half wilderness and half not, so we didn't know which side we could develop on. It was really confusing.
When you say development, do you mean like developing climbing routes or putting in hotels, or define that for us?
Sorry. Developing climbing routes. Okay. Sport climbing routes in particular. So, you know, putting bolts in the wall and anchors and all that. And it had been developed in the 90s. So there were already existing rock climbs in there, but we had kind of rediscovered it. And so we started attending some meetings in Mesquite, Nevada, which is only 30 minutes from St. George, to try to keep Arrow Canyon open and working with their local BLM. So that's kind of how it started. We ended up losing our fight but we fought pretty hard. And mm-hmm. then we just decided we needed to come together collectively as a group. And it was in the beginning very informal. And then we actually became a real alliance.
I'm sure from that first legal battle, you learned a lot. And maybe that's why you're like, yeah, let's bring this knowledge in and formalize, I guess, Southern Utah Climbing Alliance.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we kind of had to if we wanted to keep some places open. And in fact, we are currently in probably the biggest fight of our group, which has become a new thing. Moe's Valley, it's a bouldering area pretty much in town. We thought we had it handled. We thought it was going to be part of the Red Cliffs Reserve. We've been working with the city to make it kind of more like a park, like a climbing park. We recently did a full cleanup fundraiser festival out there to help keep that area open because they basically built homes right up to the valley itself. And it's a really special place. I've been going there since I moved here 21 years ago. Beautiful boulders. And so we just found out it was a land exchange for Red Cliffs to have that reserve. Yeah. And they just pulled that out from under us. Huh. And now it's risk again.
I would love to dive into that a little bit more, but maybe for folks who are not climbers and folks who haven't heard of the Southern Utah Climbing Alliance. Also, do you shorten that to SUCA or do you refer
SUCA.
To SUCA? Okay. Just so I don't have to stumble over saying it 100 more times. SUCA. I have written down the goals, the three goals that you all have. Do you mind if I just read them out really quick?
Sure.
Goal one for SUCA is preserve access to our crags through collaborative relationships with local land agencies and private landowners. Goal two, raise the funds necessary to provide the needed upkeep at our crags, including trail work, bolt replacement, and purchase of needed land to protect access. And the last one, goal three, serve as the voice for the climbing community as we continue to grow. So my first point of clarification for folks who aren't climbers, which was essentially me 3 years ago, is what's a crag and what's a bolt and why do these things? Why are these your goals?
Well, crag is definitely slang for a climbing area. And there's several different varieties and styles of climbing. Of course, there's bouldering. Bouldering is like generally just a smaller version of a big boulder and you climb on it and you can get down off of it. You use bouldering pads and there's no protection.
Yeah, no ropes.
And then there's sport
no
climbing.
Harness.
Right, exactly. And you generally have a spotter. You have some people helping you out so you don't, you know, hurt yourself.
Yeah.
And then there's sport climbing, which involves bolts in the rock, permanent bolts in the rock. But obviously they wear and tear. There's wear and tear. And so that's part of our alliance. We go and replace bolts that are rusted or failing and anchors. And then there's traditional climbing where you place camelots, your own protection into a crack. And there's a lot of crack climbing in like Zion. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's mountaineering. That's kind of self-explanatory. And
for everyone who doesn't think that mountaineering is self-explanatory, I have looked it up. According to my first search on DuckDuckGo, mountaineering is the climbing of mountains, especially using special equipment and techniques on rock, ice, or snow. Also, the act or practice of climbing mountains. And then lastly, climbing mountains as a sport, which all makes sense to me, but that's still a little vague. So I've also looked up mountaineering on Wikipedia. Mountaineering, mountain climbing, or alpinism is a set of outdoor activities that involves ascending mountains. Mountaineering-related activities include traditional outdoor climbing, skiing, and traversing via ferratas, don't know that word, that have become sports in their own right. Indoor climbing, sport climbing, and bouldering are also considered variants of mountaineering by some, but are part of a wide group of mountain sports. So, to me, that's still not super clear, but it seems, you know, you're going up a mountain and you might be ice climbing, you might be just climbing, you might be skiing, hiking, rappelling. There are lots of things that are considered mountaineering. Sorry for the long explanation. But I didn't know, and I climb, so I thought maybe you wouldn't know and would want to, just like I did. Now back to Misty.
And ice climbing. So there's all different varieties of climbing. But if you're not a climber, we definitely share a lot of land use with other people who like to recreate. A lot of hiking, mountain biking. You know, we like to go hand in hand with all those kind of groups as well.
Yeah.
Mountain
bird watching.
Exactly. I mean, when we're out climbing at different areas around here, you'll see people hiking past, you know, because we all kind of use the same places for recreation in this area.
Yeah. Yeah. Two examples of that I can think of in northern Utah are Big and Little Cottonwood Canyon. There's lots of hiking and then climbing around there. And then I recently went to City of Rock and did a bunch of hiking and climbing. So, but that makes me think of your current legal battle with Red Cliffs Reserve.
Reserve.
Can you go into a little bit more, elaborate a little bit more on it?
I mean, other people have definitely been involved trying to protect the area, and we've been working hand in hand with BLM as well. They have a great interest in it because it is a very special place. It's in this really beautiful valley. There's a lot of people that go there to hike and take their kids. It's just a really lovely place. So they did a land swap for what's called the Northern Corridor because we have so much growth in southern Utah, which you probably know about all of Utah, especially here. The Northern Corridor would basically connect I-15 and be an easier way to get over onto the west side of town where there's Santa Clara Ivins, which is growing immensely. And so they did this land swap to protect not only Moe's, but it's the Green Valley Gap, which has mountain biking trails, hiking trails, and the Bear Claw Poppy, which is very, very popular for mountain bikers. So that's all what they call Zone 6. Zone 6 and Zone 3, which is this Northern Corridor, which is also part of the Desert Reserve, because there's a large amount of desert tortoises, which are now protected. So they basically gave the green light to build this Northern Corridor as a highway through 4 miles in exchange for protecting this Zone 6 area. And so a federal judge stopped it recently and put a halt to everything, put a halt to the Northern Corridor, which makes a lot of people happy and a lot of people mad.
Yeah.
So it's just like, it's really a fight for both sides. And that's not our main concern. Our main concern is now that they're saying that's not a reserve anymore. It's a real gray area.
It's not a reserve anymore. That's what they're saying?
They're just saying it's in limbo right now. Okay. And different groups, user groups are saying, Conserve Utah, Southwest Utah saying one thing. Red Cliffs is saying a different thing. So we're kind of caught in the middle. We just want to be able to keep the area open no matter what.
Yeah.
Because this area was owned by CITLA, and that is school funded. I can't remember what the acronym stands for exactly.
CITLA is an acronym, and it stands for School and Institutional Trust Land Administration. A bunch of super boring words. But it manages the state's 3.4 million acres of trust lands. Unlike public lands, trust lands are not held in the public trust. Rather, they are held in a trust for 12 beneficiaries defined and designated by Congress at statehood. Basically, revenue generated by these lands goes to what is called the Permanent School Fund. And when they say school, they mean K through 12 schools, grade schools. And they generate revenue because on some of that land, they sometimes extract minerals or are generating energy, which has put them in the middle of a few legal battles with environmental groups, as you can imagine. But back to Misty.
CITLA, it's school-owned land. So their main job is to sell off land for development to make money for schools. So if that goes back into the hands of CITLA, which it could by the end of next year, we will absolutely 100% lose out and they will develop those areas. So it's really critical. Right now, the BLM is asking for input and it can be any user group. You can go to moesvalley.com, which is M-O-E-S valley.com, and it'll have the link to the BLM where you can make your own comments about the Northern Corridor, Zone 6, whatever, but it has to be done by December 21st. So we're scrambling as a group right now to try to get the word out to everyone statewide and nationwide, because people come from all over to climb at Moe's Valley. Like, worldwide.
Wow, I didn't know that. I wish you the best of luck in that fight. I just know of the Red Cliffs Reserve because I work with Red Cliffs Audubon, and I've helped them do a birding event down there and have hiked around. And yeah, it's a really beautiful area. I was hoping I'd see a tortoise, and I absolutely did not. But yeah, I wish you the best of luck in that fight.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for letting me get the word out, too.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking, oh, I should get this podcast episode out as soon as possible, but we'll see if I can get it out before December 21st. The next question I have for you is a little bit more of a personal one, and you've answered it in part, but how did you get involved in SECA, and what is your role as vice president? What do you do for that role?
Well, I kind of answered how I got involved with SECA, and then we just created it, and Todd Perkins is the president. He's a developer around here, and so he takes on a lot of roles, including rebolting, replacement of bad anchors and bolts and whatnot. And then there's myself, and I'm kind of the one who tries to get the word out through social media. I have all of our social media, Facebook, Instagram. That's kind of my job to be a voice. And then we have a secretary and a treasurer. And then we have a bunch of board members as well who are all very active. And we have meetings quite often because we're trying to put out fires all the time, it seems like, with the growth recently. So what was the other question?
What is your role and what do you do for it? To hear about the whole board is good. I think a lot of folks who aren't a part of a board generally don't really know what that means. So there's president, vice president, secretary, treasurer, and then other members that usually have varying roles, which sounds like you all have. And I do wonder, do you all get together to go climbing? I assume everyone's a climber, or at least passionate about it in some capacity.
All of us are pretty much friends, so we see each other out climbing all the time.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's nice. That's a good way to bring community to it.
Absolutely.
Something that I'm curious about as a newer climber, going outside at first freaked me out because I didn't know if the bolts were safe. The people I was with, they were like, yeah, no, they're good. And you can take people at their word. But sometimes if you're with somebody who doesn't know what they're doing, that can be really scary. But thinking about bolts, and you all do maintenance going out and replacing bolts, I wonder, is there some sort of system that you all have or that exists to know how old a route is? And at what point do you need to replace bolts? And in Southern Utah, do you have a list of areas and you're like, they're a little dangerous right now and we need to go do maintenance on them? How does that all logistically work?
The best way to keep a record, obviously, is guidebooks. So there have been guidebooks out in Utah for a long time. In fact, my husband, Bill, and I, we wrote the Limestone Bible. And we did all of our own research. And so we have a really great knowledge of how old all the routes are in our area. And we also cover parts of Arizona and Arrow Canyon as well. So all those records that kind of really help us as an alliance to know, okay, this route was bolted in 1990. So those bolts are this old. Let's go have a look at them and see what they look like. So we are actively doing that. Todd Perkins, he's a route developer. And so is my husband, Bill, who's on the board. Those two have kind of taken on the job of anchor management, anchor replacement, bolt replacement, and they are always actively taking care of things and keeping their eye on things, which is really nice. And as a community, if a bolt's failing or looks unsafe, people will contact us and say, hey, this route has this bolt and it's not safe. So it's really nice that we have active community, because you're right, you don't want to be climbing on a bolt that looks scary. Also, guidebooks are helpful because it generally will say who bolted the route. And there's a certain handful of people that you just know do good work. So that does help as well. We have an area, it's part of Zion National Park. It's called Kolob Canyon.
Oh, yeah.
It's very popular. This place is stunningly beautiful. There's just a handful of climbing routes there. They're really long, overhanging sandstone, really beautiful Wacos. And those anchors and bolts are 100% failing. They're super dangerous. And we've been working hard to try to get the bolt replacement process going. We're also working with Zion. They have their own climbing coalition, Zion Climbing Coalition, to try to get the bolts replaced and the anchors replaced. So we try to put out the word that those are dangerous right now and failing. But we have to go through a whole process because it is in a national park. We can't use motorized drills. It has to be all hand drilled.
Oh, wow.
So another thing we're trying to take on. So yes, to answer your question, yeah, we have to constantly be on the lookout for the general safety of climbers and rock climbing.
And I'm sure there's a whole art and mechanism to bolt replacement. Kolob, I've been there. It is absolutely gorgeous and always incredibly crowded. It's sandstone. Does that have much to do with why they're failing? I feel like limestone would be more sturdy than sandstone. Maybe they just don't last as long.
Sandstone is just not as strong as limestone. Yeah, they tend to wear a little bit more. It just carves out a little bit more with the use, or like people falling on the bolts. You can only imagine that kind of force coming down on a bolt. Yeah, sandstone is definitely softer and have to keep an eye on it a little bit better than even the limestone route.
And you said your husband, whose name is Bill, is a route manager. How does one become a route manager? Is it just reputation after a while of being a safe, consistent route setter? Or is there like a certification in the climbing universe that folks can get? They've taken certain classes or skills?
That would be nice, but no, I mean, it's just he was taught at a young age, like taught how to bolt by Jeff Pedersen. He actually owns the climbing gym up north in Salt Lake, where you're at.
The front or Momentum?
Momentum.
Cool.
He took Bill under his wing and taught him everything he knew. And that's kind of how this happens as far as route development. Yeah, Bill has a really good reputation and people do respect his routes and his skills. So yeah, there's no certification. It's more just we kind of appoint people like Bill and Todd Perkins to do the work because they know what they're doing. But, you know, you do have random people out there bolting routes, and that's why you have to keep your eye out for that as well, because sometimes they don't do a good job. It does happen because there are no rules, basically.
Yeah, which to me seems like the scary black box, right, of trusting and going outside, which is why I've done it more slowly, but it's just so fun. But I imagine, you know, if somebody goes out and just sets up a route and folks start doing it, maybe it's not in a guidebook, so people don't do it, but if they go on a route that was set up poorly and they fall, I mean, that could be deadly.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's a good thing because climbers talk. And we're a very tight community, not just Utah, all around. So, and there's all these different climbing websites and community chats. So people do talk. So the word generally does get out. There's a route that's not safe.
Yeah, that's great to hear. My next question for you was about any current fights or battles that you're up against. And you already talked about the Red Cliffs Reserve. Is there any other issues right now that you're facing in terms of protecting land?
Yeah, so number one, the Zone 6, Moose Valley one is our main objective now. And then the other one I just mentioned would be the Kolob Canyon. I mean, it's a little bit of a battle to try to get the safety concerns dealt with that. We also have a place in the Utah Hills it's a limestone area. It's called the Soul Asylum. It's very popular because it has a lot of really moderate routes, great for a beginner climber, someone like you, love it. And we got shut down out of there because it's owned by a mining company and they didn't want the liability. Some of their equipment had been vandalized out there and they did it on climbers, although I don't think it was climbers. There's a lot of mine shafts out there, so people go hiking around and getting a little bit of trouble out there because it's kind of no man's land a little bit. Although it's not too far from even where I live. It takes about half an hour to even get there. And then like it's a 20-minute hike. It's a really nice area. So we're working with the mining company as well to try to get, they've got their attorneys. We're working with our attorneys to try to come to an agreement. And actually I think we're pretty close. We've been fighting this one for about a year as well now, trying to ensure them that we'll be willing to sign liability waivers to be able to climb there and keep that place open. So hopefully that will be a battle that we will win and will be dealt with pretty quickly. So
that's cool. I didn't realize what large scale Succa was doing work. So it's cool to hear that you're doing all that and working with a national park, which always has a bunch of hoops to jump through. What are some big wins that y'all have accomplished over the past, it sounds like, decade?
Definitely keeping open places like Welcome Springs, which is really popular. It's in the Utah Hills as well. big win with working with the Arizona Land Management to keep a popular place called the Grail open, Lime Kiln Canyon, and basically just maintaining relationships with the BLM. We have a really good relationship with the BLM, which is pretty amazing because, you know, sometimes it doesn't work out that way. I know Nevada, we've worked with Nevada BLM and they've been quite difficult to work with. So we feel very fortunate to have them on our side. And we also work closely with Salt Lake Climbers Alliance.
Nice.
Keep our stewardship good with all the different land managers and other groups like that.
It's nice to see folks collaborating so well for conservation and, of course, recreation. Another more personal question I have for you is, how did you get into climbing?
Boyfriend took me out when I was 27 to Wyoming, and I fell in love with it. I just, from the very beginning, I felt like I was pretty good from the start. I definitely felt like I had natural ability. Kind of broke up over that. I would say I think I'm more obsessed about rock climbing than anything else. So, and then I started just going to the gym. I'm from Salt Lake, so that's where I really started to climb was in Salt Lake. And so I was 27. I'm 54 now, and I still climb, not at the level that I used to, but I still get out. My husband Bill O'Ran, he's an avid rock climber, obviously, and so it's just been a great lifetime of climbing and climbing community and just being able to travel all over. I mean, it's one of those sports, like I would say mountain biking or even golfing, or you go other places and you get to experience the climbing and in other places. Like we've been to Spain, we've been all over the country.
Oh, wow.
It's been really fun being kind of a dirt bag rock climber for a long time. I had to grow up at some point, but and not live in my truck. But yeah, we definitely were on the road for a long time and lived out of our truck and just traveled all over and climbed. So
that's awesome.
I feel as a female, people are, I don't know, I think generally in our community are respected. And I do like that about climbing. It's not, I obviously, you know, men used to climb harder than women, but it's not like that anymore. We're all on the same playing field, which is really nice.
Hearing that you started climbing at 27 is really exciting for me because I started climbing at 28. Maybe I should go get a truck and live out of it. And is that how you met your husband, was through climbing?
Yeah, actually, yeah. I was down here on a climbing trip. I was camping by myself and I was going to connect with some other people. And I was still working in Salt Lake, but I had just taken some time off and I was actually bouldering around by myself and he came up to me and said, "Hey, can I join you?" And
oh, that's a incredibly sweet meet cute. I love that. You said you started climbing up in Salt Lake, which is where I'm from. I'm currently living in Logan right now. What's some of your favorite climbing just out of Salt Lake?
I started climbing in Big Cottonwood Canyon. So I did a lot of my first climbs in Big Cottonwood Canyon, which is on quartzite, and it can be kind of slippery. When I started to climb more, I never went back there.
Okay.
It's so funny because when you start, you have this innocence about you. And when you go back to revisit routes that you did when you were maybe a little bit more green, you're like, "Oh, I did that? That's crazy." But definitely American Fork was my favorite place to climb up there. And okay, that's a limestone canyon and it's gorgeous. And there's just every style of climbing, short routes, long routes, easy routes, hard routes. It really covers everything. And it's just a stunning place to climb. So I would recommend that. And for you, do you have a climbing gym in Logan? You have a climbing gym in Logan, right?
Yeah, we have Elevation. And then, of course, we have one on campus. And as a grad student, I have access to it. But yeah, Elevation is pretty good. I will say I wish the lighting in there was a little better, but that's my only qualm.
Well, I would suggest finding partners that are better than you, that you can, you know, learn something from, that you feel safe with, because that's the number one thing, is you want to feel safe out on the rock, because, you know, scary things happen out on the rock, accidents do happen, and definitely finding somebody that you trust, and you'll find the areas that you love as well. Just try a bit of everything.
Mm-hmm. I do love Logan Canyon, but that's been a majority of my outdoor climbing. The limestone is nice. Though sometimes a little sharp.
Yeah. Limestone does tend to be sharp. You have to try to not complain about it too much. Logan Canyon, I've done climbing in the Logan Canyon. It's a beautiful area as well.
I think that's, you know, the benefit of living in Utah is I can't think of a canyon that I'm like, oh yeah, actually that one isn't beautiful. I just wanted to hear you talk about your members of the Southern Utah Climbing Alliance. Who are they? What are some of the cool things that you see them doing?
Absolutely. Well, it's grown a lot in the past, 20 years since I've been here, which has been great. We have members in all age groups. We definitely have younger members that come and help us with projects. We recently did one, the Hurricane. It's a big cave in Hurricane. It has really steep, beautiful climbs. It was all chossing away where you would belay, becoming a little dangerous to just even stand. You're on the slope and rocks would come down. So we had an incentive and we raised money through Southern Utah Climbers Alliance for projects like this, where we went and built platforms for belayers to stand on, so to make it safer and to get around, and stairs. And it's quite the elaborate platform system that they've been built. Perkins and my husband Bill, they initiated it and designed it. But we had a lot of our younger climbers that aren't as old as like Bill and Todd that we asked for help, and people showed up, all the young males and females hauled wood all the way up to the cliff. I mean, it's a 40-minute hike, steep hike, and they hauled up all the materials for us. So that's a great example of how we kind of work together with our younger people, and then they help out the old folks like myself. So yeah, it's been great. We had our Moe's Valley event, which I mentioned earlier, and we had everything from little kids bouldering around to older people. It's just been really lovely how our community has grown so much, and we are a close-knit community and tend to get along and work well together.
Would you say most of your members also live in the St. George area, or is it pretty scattered across Southern Utah?
Pretty scattered. We definitely have people that live in St. George proper, but also a big group of climbers live in Hurricane. A lot of climbers like to climb on that side as well, or like to climb in Zion, which is closer to the Hurricane area. It's on the eastern side of Washington County. So Washington County has grown so much, and we have a climbing gym here now, Contact Climbing. It's a huge climbing gym, and they have been excellent with working with us as far as fundraisers and everything. So it's just been crazy watching our community grow so quickly.
For folks who want to join, who's welcome to join, and how can they get connected to Sukha? How do they become members?
The best way to become a member is to go to our website, which is southernutahclimbers.org. It's really user-friendly. There's a link that you can click. I just got a donation today for $10. I mean, anything helps us. You can become a member, and then it'll be taken out annually, whatever your amount is that you want to become a member at. So anybody can become a member, obviously, and we appreciate any help that we can get to, especially since we're going to be fighting some big fights here and trying to get other people on board to help us out. So anything helps us. It goes to the bolt and anchor replacement as well. And then labor that's...
For folks who do become a member or are involved more broadly, are there events also that folks can help with or just go to? Do you have any upcoming events or annual events?
We just did our big one for Moe's, but we'll definitely be having another one hopefully in the spring, so we can get everybody, the community together and do that more regularly. This last Moe's event was amazing. We had local musicians, one of the music climber, and Charlie Kessner. He's amazing, by the way, if you want to go look him up. He actually climbed up on top of one of the boulders and played on top of the boulder.
Oh my gosh.
So we do fun fundraiser like that. So our goal is to do that same thing, but maybe make it like a music festival so we can raise money that way in the spring at Moe's Valley. So look for that upcoming event. We're trying to get some momentum behind getting a toilet put in at a popular crag called Welcome Springs. We've been working with BLM for like 10 years trying to get a toilet in this area. It's a very popular place to camp, and it just becomes a little...
Yeah.
So we go out there and try to keep it clean. Those are some of the upcoming things that we have on plate.
Awesome. Lastly, where can people follow you on social media?
You can just Google me, Misty Murphy. You'll find me. My Instagram will come up. My Facebook's just Misty Murphy. I have my own website, which is mistymurphy.com. I'm a real estate agent, so it does have a lot of my real estate stuff on there as well. But if you go to my About Me page, it'll also link you to just a really fun video that was done by one of my sponsors, Mad Rock Climbing. Just kind of shows you my home and Bill's home and how we built it, and the climbing part of it as well. It has some fun climbing video. And some of my music, I've been playing music for a long time, and that's on there as well. Just Google me.
Yeah. On Instagram, you also have Southern Utah Climbing Alliance, but I think it's SU Climbing Club. But either way, I will link it in the notes so that anyone listening can follow you there. I assume that's where you can find out about events. And we'll definitely be following you as the Do Care podcast and post any fun things that we see on there to our audience. Is there anything else you want to share with us?
No, I just really appreciate you and your time and having me on and letting me get the word out about our cause and the things that we're concerned about. And we just appreciate any exposure that we can get.
Yeah, I think you guys are great. And I hope to get more climbing groups on here talking about how we can protect our wilderness areas. It means a lot to me. And as a Utahn, I know how magical these spaces are. So great work.
Let me know if you're ever in Southern Utah. I'll take you climbing.
Oh my gosh, yes. I would love that. I would absolutely love that. Well, I will thank AJ Vanzibin for the intro music. And to close out, as my dad always says, use your head and be clever. Bye, everyone. Say bye.
Bye.
P.S., my dear listeners, Mary and I are planning to have a follow-up episode to this talk, specifically about climbing and climbing culture from the lens of queer and femme folks who are in the climbing community. Additionally, we aspire to do a series of episodes on diverse identities engaging in outdoor activities with groups such as All Bodies on Bikes, Fat Hikers, Unlikely Hikers, Latinos Outdoors, Utah Rainbow Hikers, Birdability, and the Queer Rodeo. That's right, there's a queer rodeo in Utah. If you know someone who would be a good point of contact to discuss queer climbing culture or diverse identities in the outdoors, please email us at docarepodcast@gmail.com. That's docarepodcast@gmail.com. Or on Instagram, you can message us. We are docarepodcast on Instagram. Please follow us there. Also, please rate and review the podcast if you like the show. That really helps us out. And lastly, thank you, thank you, thank you for being a listener. I have not said that before, but I really do appreciate all of you who are our listeners. I will see you next time. Bye.